there. Abhavat appeared. Bhagavan, powerful. Vyas Putra, son of Vyasadeva. Idrichaya, as one desires. Gam, the earth. Atamanaha, while traveling. Anapekshaha, disinterested. Alaksha, unmanifested. Lingaha, symptoms. Nijalabha, self-realized. Tushtaha, satisfied. Ritaha, surrounded. Cha, and. Bailar, by children. Abhaduta, neglected by others. Beishaha, dressed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. At that moment there appeared the powerful son of Vyasadeva, who traveled over the earth, disinterested and satisfied with himself. He did not manifest any symptoms of belonging to any social order or status of life. He was surrounded with women and children, and he dressed as if others had neglected him. Purport. The word Bhagavan is sometimes used in relation with some of the great devotees of the Lord, like Shukadeva Goswami. Such liberated souls are disinterested in the affairs of this material world because they are self-satisfied by the great achievements of devotional service. As explained before, Shukadeva Goswami never accepted any formal spiritual master, nor did he undergo any formal reformatory performances. His father, Vyasadeva, was his natural spiritual master, but Shukadeva Goswami heard Srimad Bhagavatam from him. After this, he became completely self-satisfied. Thus, he was not dependent on any formal process. The formal processes are necessary for those who are expected to reach the stage of complete liberation. But Shukadeva Goswami was already in that status by the grace of his father. As a young boy, he was expected to be properly dressed, but he went about naked and was uninterested in social customs. He was neglected by the general populace, and inquisitive boys and women surrounded him as if he were a madman. He thus appeared on the scene while traveling on the earth of his own accord. It appears that upon the inquiry of Maharaj Parikshit, the great sages were not unanimous in their decision as to what was to be done. For spiritual salvation, there are many prescriptions according to the different modes of different persons. But the ultimate aim of life is to attain the highest professional stage of devotional service to the Lord. As doctors differ, so also sages differ in their different prescriptions. While such things were going on, the great and powerful son of Vyasadeva appeared on the scene. That moment there appeared the powerful son of Vyasadeva, who traveled over the earth disinterested and satisfied with himself. He did not manifest any symptoms of belonging to any social order or status of life. He was surrounded with women and children, and he dressed as if others had neglected him. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvata Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskyadhyade Sitarane. In the Chaturasloki verses of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says he's everything, which is completely beyond our conception. What does that mean? But it's a lot more than we can conceive of. He's the source of all beauty, all strength, all knowledge, all fame, all wealth, and all renunciation. Inconceivably opulent. existence is to become conscious of them. As soon as one becomes conscious, fully conscious of Krishna, then one's life is perfect. Doesn't matter externally what one's position is in the material world, because the body is just a covering of different elements. But when it's conducted solely by the spiritual energy, then it becomes just like the spiritual energy. And in order to reach that stage, Krishna says, much chitta, much kata prana, bodhi antash parashvram, kata yantash vam nityam, tu shanti cha ramanti cha. That we are supposed to hear from Krishna's representatives who are telling us the same message of Krishna. That. And what are we hearing for? Because chitta, to somehow or another, absorb our consciousness in Krishna. If during the day, somehow or another, we remember the form of Rukmini Dwarkadish, or Lord Jagannath, or Lord Baladev, or Sumati Subhadradevi, or we see the form of Gornitai within our heart, or Prabhupada, or some great devotee, then that's called chitta. We're absorbing our minds in Krishna. And if we're not doing that, then we must be somewhere else. Either we're absorbing our minds in Krishna, or our minds are absorbing us in some kind of illusion or fantasy. Now, of course, in our ordinary daily activities, we actually believe in the dream that we're currently undergoing. We have full faith in it. We actually believe that's me and I'm actually doing those things. But when we remember Krishna, when we remember Krishna's devotees, then we get a little hint that maybe I should just be an instrument to serve them. And then our material life begins to slacken. Therefore, chitta and prana, we're hearing in order to engage our energies in Krishna's service. It's not that I'm remembering Krishna and doing all nonsense, but they work together. If I'm actually, my consciousness is absorbed that everything is Krishna's, then the next question should be, what does Krishna want me to do with his energy? And if the answer comes and we say, well, that's not what I want to do with your energy, come back later. Krishna is very, just like they have in these task managers, you don't want to do the task right now, and you set a date in the future. So then set a date in the future. I don't want to surrender that now, but, come back in a couple of years and we'll see where I'm at. Maybe I'll surrender it then. In any case, the whole thing comes about, what do we want to surrender to Krishna? What part of our wealth, what part of our consciousness, our thoughts, what kind of our conceptions, what do we actually want to surrender to Krishna? We can surrender so many material things to Krishna, we can even surrender our head. But that doesn't mean we're surrendering our life to Krishna. Like Jarasandha, when Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhima went to beg charity from Jarasandha in order that Jarasandha would be willing to fight with Bhima especially, so that instead of destroying Jarasandha's army, which Krishna had done, I believe, something like 17 or 18 times before. And this time he just wanted to kill Jarasandha. And so he went to beg something, a duel from Jarasandha. They went as Brahmins because Jarasandha was actually generous to the Brahmins. He was a follower of the Vedic culture. So Krishna flattered Jarasandha, telling him about Maharaj Shibi, how he sacrificed his own flesh for a pigeon, Maharaj Ranti Devi, who was about to die from hunger but was sacrificing even the last drop of his water to someone who came before him, some dogs that came before him. And Jarasandha was hearing this, and he said, yay, that's great. I'll give up my own head, because that way, like Maharaj Shibi and Maharaj Ranti Dev and others, I'll get immortal fame. So he was going to give up his mind. He was going to give up his feelings, his body, just to serve his false ego. Not to serve Krishna, but to serve his false ego. People will go on to the battle. They'll fight against some other army in order to get some medal, a little tiny medal that will serve their false ego. So people will sacrifice even their existence to satisfy their false ego, but very few people are willing to satisfy their false ego, to sacrifice their false ego to satisfy Krishna. They want to sacrifice their Krishna consciousness to satisfy their false ego, but they don't want to satisfy their false ego to satisfy Krishna. So that's the only problem in the material world. That's the main problem. But Sukadeva, therefore, not only citta, but prana. Engage everything in Krishna's service, tad buddhiyas, tad atmanas, tad nishtas, tad parayanaha, kajanyapuna avritim, jnana nirduta kamasha. When one's faith, when one's mind, when one's refuge, one's intelligence are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of all misgivings through complete knowledge and proceeds straight on the path of self-realization. And what happens? Do the angels come down and give you a free trip to Hawaii? Do you get immortal fame and then the next Brahma praises you? No. Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Swapake Cha Pandita Samadarshana. That you give up your false ego, and the false ego means false prestige, the desire for false adoration, distinction. That even the lowly elephant, well, elephant is pretty high, but even the lowly dog eater or the dog, you see that they're actually exactly equal to you spiritually. They may not be, they may be in a different material situation, but you have to become humble. When you see how everyone, all these living entities, are exactly the same as you are. That there's nothing you can do, nothing anyone can do, to become anything greater than, or to become as great as Krishna, or those who are already greater than oneself in terms of spiritual status, especially in the spiritual world. That one remains simply the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna eternally. That's the gift of becoming self-realized. That one is forced to become absolutely humble. So anyone who doesn't want to become absolutely humble, well, this is not a good society for you. It's quite a disappointment. Because generally everyone's working hard to become something special. And if you work hard and you see how you're simply not ordinary, because everything is extraordinary in the spiritual world, but you'll feel yourself completely insignificant. And everyone will say, oh, poor devotee, he worked so hard for the movement, and he had to give up his false prestige, and it's now he doesn't have any self-esteem. He's just thinking himself to be a servant of everyone. But actually, that's the goal. So Sukadeva Goswami had achieved that goal. He was a liberated soul within the womb of his mother. That was, he was on the Brahman platform. So he saw everyone equally. That's the stage, our stage is called Nishta. There's no Soshiti, there's no Kanchiti, there's no hankering, there's no lamentation. There's nothing to achieve in terms of, let me get better than you are. Let me feel like even if I'm an illusion, at least I'm in a good illusion. I'm in an enjoyable illusion. No, at that stage, one is not hankering, one is not limited. And he sees everyone as a spiritual being. And then when he adds Krishna consciousness to it, then he can see everyone as a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Either one serves Krishna directly through his representatives and the internal energy, or one serves Krishna indirectly through his illusory energy. But one must serve Krishna. So Shukadeva Goswami was writing on that stage, and when he heard from his father the pastimes of Krishna, he was able to experience them directly, which means there was no covering, there was no blocking, so he was in ecstasy immediately. He was not a Mayavadi, he was an impersonalist. That is, the difference between the Mayavadis is they say there's no such thing as Krishna. The impersonalists don't know about Krishna, that's all. Or Shukadeva Goswami knew about Krishna, but he didn't know his glories. Because otherwise, when he was in the womb of his mother for 16 years, his mother was getting a little uncomfortable. Which I'm sure the ladies can understand. And therefore, his father was saying, well, come out, I guarantee you, you don't have to worry about this because you won't be an illusion. I guarantee you, his father said, Shukadeva Goswami said, no way. I don't trust you at all. Householders say so many things to get their way. So he said, the only person I trust is Krishna. So obviously he was not in Mayavadi. He knew who to put his faith in, Krishna. And when Krishna said, no worries, then Shukadeva Goswami left after 16 years and walked away. But Vyasadeva sent his disciples to speak some verses from the Bhagavatam. And when Shukadeva Goswami heard those, he was in ecstasy. And he came back to hear some more. And he heard the Bhagavatam from his illustrious father and was completely wrapped in Krishna consciousness. Now, one may say, well, everyone else took initiation, even Krishna did. Why didn't Shukadeva Goswami? Because he had to reach the stage where that the perfection of initiation. Initiation is not meant so that one can identify oneself as, you know, being part of a certain group. No, it's that the perfection of the initiation is to go beyond any sense of being part of any group in the material world, any material designation, to the platform where one sees everyone as the object of one's service under the direction of one's spiritual master. So the spiritual master and the super soul and the acharyas will direct one in the stage of perfection how to properly serve every living entity perfectly as an instrument of Krishna. So Shukadeva Goswami was already on that platform, so he didn't take initiation from anyone, and even his father didn't give him initiation. Just as a point of information. Controversial point, but it's in Prabhupada's books that in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, then Prabhupada writes in terms of Shuniti wasn't able to become the spiritual master of Dhruva Maharaj, because Shuniti, whether you read it in the edited edition or the original edition, Prabhupada writes that Shuniti, because he was his mother as well as a woman, could not become the spiritual initiating guru of Dhruva. She was his Shiksha guru. And then probably in the original one, before it was edited, it says that Suniti, because she was his mother as well as a woman, as well as a relative, could not become the spiritual master of Dhruva Maharaj. So here Vyasadeva was the father, and therefore he could not initiate Shukadeva Goswami as per etiquette, just like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur did not initiate his son. He sent him to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji for initiation. That initiation, but there was no need to initiate Shukadeva Goswami, who was already on the platform of liberation and beyond liberation, as Prabhupada said, complete liberation. That's Krishna consciousness. In the spiritual world, I don't think, of course we have Purnamasi. She's the spiritual master of everyone. But I don't know, I never read of her sitting everyone down one day and doing a fire jugga and changing Radharani. Your name is Radharani Devi Dasi now. No, they've eternally been have had the same names eternally, which is quite a long time. And there's no mention of anyone changing their name at the time of initiation, because they're all spiritual. We change our name. We have initiation to change our conception. But if one is already on the spiritual platform, there's no need to change the conception from being a servant of matter to becoming a servant of Krishna, because they're eternally situated on that platform. Some more will be said about Shukadeva Goswami. He was surrounded by so many women and children, and he was dressed as if the different elements were his dress, the different directions were his dress, which means that he was naked. But he was on a completely different level of experience, beyond what we can understand. Because for him, he was just seeing the material energy, and he was seeing the spiritual energy. And he was absorbed in the spiritual energy, and he saw the material energy as part of the spiritual energy. So he didn't differentiate between women and children or anyone else or men, because he saw the spiritual souls and Krishna moving everything, and that these are just like dresses that we put on. And therefore he didn't feel any need. He wasn't agitated at all from any material situation. He was situated in the spiritual existence. And at least in that culture at that time, it was acceptable. Nowadays, if you were an avidute and you walk down the street like that, then I don't think most people wouldn't appreciate it. And the government wouldn't say, well, he's an avidute, leave him alone. But in that culture, it was acceptable because that culture was aiming towards spiritual perfection. And they honored, at least those who had awareness or consciousness, they honored those who were spiritually advanced. But as we see, those who were less, not so advanced or not so conscious, they didn't understand and couldn't honor the Shukadeva Goswami properly. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes, Harji Debra.
Thank you, Maharaj. This point about Shukadeva Goswami initiation, you're saying, rightly, that he was beyond the material conception and therefore didn't absolutely need. But we see when Krishna himself comes, he takes initiation. Lord Chaitanya takes. And Prabhupada has mentioned many, many times about this, that even the Lord himself, when he comes, takes initiation. Therefore, initiation is the norm. Otherwise, people can just follow this Shukadeva Goswami idea and say, hey, I'm beyond matter. I don't need to be initiated. I can walk around naked. Leave me alone.
Yes. But on the other hand, what is initiation? Prahlad Maharaj was initiated by Narada Muni, or Dhruva Maharaj, for instance, was initiated by Narada Muni. Well, let's take Prahlad. Prahlad was in the womb. He just heard from Narada Muni, and because he heard with rapt attention, he had realized the subject matter, and that was initiation. Brahma, Krishna didn't come and sit down on the lotus flower with him and do a little fire sacrifice and said, your name is Brahma Das. Das Anudas. No, within his heart, he initiated him. So there are different kinds of initiation. And real initiation is the change of, or bhakti, is the change of conception from matter to spirit. So because of Kali Yuga in this age, we have to go through, as Prabhupada said, we have a fire sacrifice, which is a show. And before the deities, we have to do so many things in order to confirm that actually, I'm actually doing this seriously. That these people have taken the trouble to set up this fire jaga, that I'm getting some beads, and I'm surrounded by all these devotees, that, you know, they're watching my fingers and making sure when I recite the regular principles, you know, my fingers aren't crossed. So, because we need some extra stimulation to take this hearing process seriously and surrendering process seriously. Therefore, we have our formal type of initiation. And we have to follow it, because that's what our acharyas are giving us in disciple succession. But we shouldn't think that more exalted devotees in more advanced ages had to go through the same rituals we have to do in order to actually take it seriously. Yes.
So basically, generally, to get to the stage to be without false ego, self-realize, you have to actually, this is my question, you have to really be enough proficient in knowledge about bhakti in Prabhupada books, you know, proficient in Bhagavad Gita. Not only knowing Prabhupada books, also implying to them, without that actually it's not possible to, is my question, it's not possible to...
Yeah, well, let's trace it back. The stage of prema, when you have no more material experience of material existence, everything is spiritual, and then you have no more false ego. When you're in the stage of bhava, when you're in ecstasy all the time, and you're constantly absorbed in, you're practically in Krishna's pastimes, you can sometimes hear Krishna's flute, and sometimes Krishna personally comes and touches you, then material existence appears like a dream. You know, that appears sometimes as a dream. And when you're in a state of asakti, when you can't stop, but you can't, you're constantly remembering Krishna, and you can't help but remember Krishna, because even if your mind deviates for a moment, then immediately it goes back to Krishna. Then you're not on the stage of uttamadhikari. You're the stage of sadhana. And you still have some identification, at least part of the time, with the material energy. And if you're on the stage of ruchi, where everything is tasteful, everyone you look at, you're experiencing pleasure from, everything you smell, taste, hear about, gives you pleasure. Your spiritual senses have been awakened, and you're experiencing everything through them. Then you're still in the material concept of life to some extent. And when you're at the stage of nishtha, material life seems half and half. It's not really quite clear exactly who you are. It's clear who you're not. And at the stage of anartha nivritti, then we're struggling with our false ego. That's why we have anartha nivritti, because sometimes we're attached to our material conceptions and sometimes we're trying to get rid of them. So, yes, without... And the qualification to join Krishna's pastime in general is uttama, is bhava. We find that those who join Krishna's pastimes in some other universe were at least on that platform. So we have to come to that platform. So if we, you know, it takes some time, it takes some effort, it takes devotee association, it takes a lot of things. But when the goal is clear, as it was said yesterday in the class by Ramapad Maharaj, when the goal is clear, then Prabhupada said it slowly but progressively it's transverse. Yes.
Thanks for a nice class, Maharaj. One question, and I was just wondering, I may have overlooked it or got distracted, but you began the story of Jarasandha versus Bhima. Did you finish the story? If you did, then you don't have to go any further. But if you didn't finish the story, you'd be appreciated.
Well,
if you did.
The point I was, do you want to find out who won? Or?
No, I know who won. I want everybody else to know who won.
Well, my point was that Jarasandha was willing to sacrifice his own body in order to achieve perpetual fame. That's why Krishna tricked him, you know. If you, all these great personalities like Maharshibi, Maharajranti Dev, and others, they sacrifice their existence and they achieve immortal fame. So maybe you like to, you know, give some charity to us, and you'll become immortally famous. And Jarasandha said, yes, that's fantastic. I always wanted to become immortally famous. So if I'll give you some charity, although I know you're Kshatriyas, dressed as Brahmins, but because you've, actually he said, because you've degraded yourselves. Now we may think, well, you know, they dress as Brahmins, that's the step up. But in the Vedic culture, if you take on a position that actually you're not qualified, it's not seen as elevating yourselves, it's seen as degrading yourselves. So because they dressed as Brahmins, Jarasandha became thinking that they become so fallen that they come here to beg for me in the form of Brahmins, so they're fallen Kshatriyas. So therefore, whatever they want, I'll give them, and I'll get immortal fame. And if you want to find out who won in the match, you have to read the Krishna book. But you already recited the Krishna book, so I think you know. And we leave it to those who don't know to go and read the Krishna book. Anything else? So it's nice being here. We look forward to coming back again as soon as Krishna allows me to. I'm destined to go away from Rukmini Dwarkadish for some reason. But if you pray for me, then one day I'll come back here again. So thank you for your nice association. We look forward to seeing you again. Did you have a question or something? Thank you. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.